Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids, going to cons is our.
Everybody, and welcome back to the Long Box, guys. My name is Thomas Strange, and I'm so happy to be here with my good friends talking about comic books. And today, we're actually taking a cue from one of the Long Box Legion, and they wanted us to talk about sidekicks. And we're not going to talk about any sidekick. We're going to talk about some of our favorite Robins. But before we get into that, Josh, how you doing, and what you drinking?
I'm doing pretty well, and tonight I'm drinking Rogue's Brewing Hazelnut Brown, which is a delicious beer that also has the side effect of not being liked by either my stepson or my wife. So when I buy it, it's all mine.
Nice. And by the way, I forgot to ask you, Josh, have you paid your dues?
You mean my taxes?
No.
Yeah.
We're going to work on this. Tommy, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I am drinking some Cardew tonight.
Have you paid your dues, Tommy?
I don't belong to a union.
Obscure. Oh, Mike's got a glint in his eye. Mike, how you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent. I have a Michelob Ultra as a chaser for my dead partner, so I'm doing fine.
And let me ask you, have you paid your dues?
When Tom Strange looks you in the eye and asks you if you pay your dues, you look him back and say, yes, sir. Yes, I have.
The check's in the mail.
Oh, damn it. I screwed that up.
You screwed it up.
I knew what you were talking about. I knew you were going Big Trouble in Little China.
Big Trouble in Little China. I'm gonna try and mix it up in the beginnings here and see if we can finish off some of my favorite movie quotes. I thought that'd be a fun one to start with. And also, someday we should really do a podcast all about comic books, movies that made it over into comic books later. Not like Star Wars, which was a comic book first. Very little known fact that Mike
Alec
told
fact.
Me about. Yeah, Alan fact. Star Wars comic book before it was a movie. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about Robins. So instead of talking about the origin of Robins and why Robins relevant, we're going to just get right into some of the better Robins. And we'll probably mention some of the other Robins that show up that we don't mention in these as kind of a prologue. Tommy, why don't you start us off? Who's your favorite Robin?
Well, I'm going to talk about Dick. I'm going to talk all about Dick. Dick Grayson, the first Robin. He was created by Bob Kane, Bill Finger, and Jerry Robinson. He first appeared in 1940 in Detective Comics number 38.
I just want to ask, do you love Dick?
I like Dick. I don't love Dick.
Okay, just asking. Go ahead.
I like Dick from, like, across the room. I can read a Dick story every once in a while, but he's not the type of comic that I buy.
Just asking.
Just saying.
Yeah, that joke is not going to get old on this podcast.
Nope.
So Dick Grayson has been around since 1940. Eventually, he does grow up. He becomes his own hero, becomes Nightwing. As we've mentioned many, many a time, I am not a big DC person. Growing up, I read mostly Marvel. But recently I've been trying to read more DC to become a more rounded comic book fan. And recently I read Nightwing, New 52, Nightwing Volume 1, Traps and Trapezes. And it was a very good story about how Dick Grayson, his origin story was, of course, that he was part of the Flying Graysons in Haley's Circus. And his parents were killed during their trapeze act, and in the New 52, he was given the circus that his parents were killed at. by the owner who willed it to him. And someone was trying to kill Dick Grayson. And so he was investigating as Nightwing while trying to put on the front of managing the circus. And it was a very good story, and it kind of led into the Court of Owls storyline of the Batman. And that was also an excellent storyline. So I recommend reading the New 52 Nightwing Volume 1 Traps and Trapezes. It just goes into Nightwing as a character, and it was a very well-written story.
Well, we do like Nightwing. We've actually talked about Nightwing a few other times. Mikey, who's your favorite? I'm sorry, you have a side?
Dick Grayson is probably my favorite Batman. He actually wore the cowl for quite a while, once after Batman got injured and another time after Batman was supposedly killed, but he was actually sent back in time. And if you get a chance to read the Batman and Robin stories where Batman is Dick Grayson and Robin is Damian Wayne, it is great because it's a great juxtaposition between the two characters. Batman is the happy-go-lucky one, and Robin is the mean, vicious little one. it's a great turnaround, and I really like Dick Grayson in that. I would like to talk about Dick's replacement, and that is Jason Todd, who is the crappiest Robin of all time.
I'm sorry, there was a replacement Dick?
I knew that joke was not going to get old. So, yes, in 1984, Dick Grayson hangs up the little green tights. They decided, okay, we need somebody to replace Dick Grayson as Robin, and they choose Jason Todd. Now, Jason Todd was a member of the Todd family, which were a group of acrobats in a circus. Tell me if this sounds familiar. His parents are killed by Killer Croc, and Batman, feeling so bad about it, decides to adopt Jason Todd. And that was his origin story until Crisis on Infinite Earths. Jason had only appeared for about 4 months or so when Crisis happened, and they decided, yeah, we want to make a darker Batman. So Frank Miller comes back into the Bat titles and writes Batman Year One, which is a dark, gritty tale. And when they come back to the present day with Batman, they decide to reintroduce Jason Todd. This time he is a car thief. His mom is a crack addict who has passed away, and his dad is in jail because he's a petty criminal. Batman encounters Jason Todd stealing the wheels off of the Batmobile. And he tries to catch Jason, and Jason hits him in the gut with a tire iron and thinks he escapes, but Batman is impressed by him, follows him, finds out his story, and decides to adopt him and train him as the next Robin. And a little bit of foreshadowing, his first adventure as Robin, he beats up the Joker, and the Joker swears, "I am going to kill you." Cut to a few years later, everybody hates Jason Todd, and DC decides, let's let the fans decide. They're going to have a story called Death in the Family, and the readers will decide on who lives and who dies, if it's going to be Jason Todd lives or dies. And in a very close vote, by only a few hundred votes, Jason Todd is chosen to die by the fans, and Joker beats him to death with a crowbar. And that should have been the end of Jason Todd, because it was a great storyline. Batman now becomes dark and brooding, and this starts to haunt him. However, comic books being comic books, can't let it lie. And Jason comes back as the Red Hood. It's a long, arduous story, but in essence, a superboy from another universe punches reality so hard it breaks it and revives Jason Todd because, you know, that's scientific. And when he comes back, he has no idea who he is. Talia al Ghul takes him in. He gets dumped into a Lazarus pit, kind of goes a little bit insane, finds out that there's another replacement for him, but a new Robin, who is probably actually the best Robin, Tim Drake, and Jason Todd finds Tim, beats the shit out of him, and that's it's a storyline called Under the Red Hood. So if you want to read a great Jason Todd story, read that one, Under the Red Hood. It's probably his best. He's had some other stories that were pretty good. He's a much better Batman villain than he is a part of the Batman family. Have you guys read any Jason Todd?
I've read some Jason Todd, sure.
I mean, I can see why the fans voted for him to die, because clearly you can't trust a person with two first names anyway. I mean, straight out of the gate, you can't be a Jason Todd. You can put that comma anywhere. He could be Todd Jason. You don't know. Nobody enjoys that. Nobody.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I interviewed some people to take a job today, and one was Todd Robert Justin. I'm like, nope, three first names. I can't do it. Go. He's like, what? I'm like, go. I can't do it. Three first names. I can't.
Yeah, 2 weeks out, that guy's on a water tower with a rifle.
Yeah, just, you can't. Can't. I couldn't. Josh, as long as you're being so...
name out.
Yeah. Since you're being so talkative, Josh, who was your favorite Robin?
I get to go with Damian Wayne. He's the little evil one. So Damian Wayne first appears as a unnamed infant in Batman, Son of the Demon, and he is the grandson of Ra's al Ghul, the child of Batman and Talia al Ghul. He basically gets raised in the League of Assassins, and he's a bad little guy, man. He beats up on some pretty impressive folks. But in the end, of course, he gets turned around, and they feel like his... overly violent tendencies have been battled down enough where they basically let him join Teen Titans against several other people's, they don't want him there. Power Girl's like, no way. And a couple other people are like, no, he's probably just going to end up killing people. And they're like, no, it's fine. It's probably fine. Of course, once again, I'm a new reader to DC, so this is, I'm reading the Teen Titans Rebirth version of this, and I enjoy the new Teen Titans. And in the first issue of Teen Titans Rebirth, not to spoil everything for everyone, but he basically does exactly what everybody is afraid to while they're questioning somebody. He just goes and flips out and almost kills a guy. So they, you know, he's got some work to do, but... early on, he's trying to train the other Teen Titans who are sort of haphazard in their situational awareness and the limitations or extent of their own powers. So he's really trying to motivate the team in the beginning, but he also gets lost in his own adventures and sort of goes solo and rogue right out of the gate. So he's sort of one of those sort of mercurial characters, and you're not really sure what he's going to do. He's a tiny loose cannon with a bunch of Batman gadgets, and I've enjoyed him so far.
So, quick question about his origin. Was that consensual between Batman and, Batman and Talia?
Yeah, it was the original is an out-of-continuity story, and... I think they just sort of brought it back and just used it as a to bring a Robin back into the game. So I'm not really sure on the history of the whole mix-up. I hadn't actually read Batman: Son of the Demon yet. It's on my Comixology list, though.
So. Oh, it was very rapey. Talia al Ghul drugs Batman up and bones her. Yeah, he has no idea going on.
Yeah, I actually kind of – that was a leading question. I kind of knew that one. She drugs the shit out of him. In any other comic book, of course, this would have been absolute total rape. But because of the juxtaposition between the woman and the man, it's seen more as assault than rape. When in effect – not in effect. In fact, it is rape. Batman got raped. Nothing funny about that. I'm saying it.
I don't like to talk about that.
I think we all know why he got raped. Because he didn't have dick by his side.
Yeah. I thought you were going to go with what he was wearing. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's asking for it.
He had a sidekick dick. So he would have been fine.
Yeah. He's a guy who wears his underwear on the outside. Of course he was asking for it.
Spandex and those plastic nipply things?
Seriously, plastic nipples?
Yeah.
You're just begging for it.
Begging for it. Speaking of begging for it.
We at the Long Box, guys, do not condone rape.
No.
In any direction, by any gender.
No matter what the person's wearing.
That's true.
That's the joke we're making here. Batman did not need to be raped.
Dick would have watched his back.
All right, we have to stop with the dick jokes. It's not funny.
Yeah. How many dicks so far? Too many dicks on the dance floor. Too many dicks on the dance floor. Thin out the dicks! You guys don't know that song at all, do you?
No.
That better not be the end thing. All right. Speaking of dicks, let's go the other way. I'm going to talk about one of my favorite female Robins. I really love The Dark Knight Returns. And because I love The Dark Knight Returns, I, of course, really loved Carrie Kelly. Carrie Kelly was a very interesting character. She was one of the few non-orphaned or non-related Robins. She was one of the few female Robins. There was a couple others here and there. Some just impersonated Robin. Some had the Robin mantle for a very short time. Carrie Kelly was someone who admired the Batman. Batman saves her when he returns, and she decides to take up the mantle of Robin. She does this by, you know, going out and fighting villains, hoping to attract the Batman's attention. Carrie is very good with computers, very good with software. She reprograms the Batmobile in various little ways, which is a lot of fun to watch. Batman is trying to get the Batmobile to accelerate, and he's saying all these buzzwords, and then he looks over at Carrie, and Carrie goes, "Peel," and the Batmobile takes off. So she's, you know, able to reprogram some very sophisticated computer equipment. Batman often says that he's going to get rid of her, but she kind of stays in there because she saves his life twice alone in The Dark Knight Returns. In the subsequent comic book, she takes up the mantle of Catgirl for a while, for most of the comic, and she has various gadgets. She's a little rougher, a little darker in that second one, but she's a very enjoyable character. Her parents, who do exist, are kind of these ex-hippies who become kind of apathetic and hardly even remember they have a daughter. So though she's not an orphan, she doesn't really have a very strong parental influence in her life. And that draws her to the Batman, and that, I think, draws the Batman to her. Some people have also said that Frank Miller was trying to say that Carrie was in love with the Batman. I've read the comic book, both comic books, quite a few times. And when Carrie is thinks she's going to die, she does, you know, say that she loves the Batman, and Batman says she loves her back. I do very much feel that was more of a father-daughter, daughter-father kind of relationship. Does anyone not feel that? I was just wondering.
No, I agree with you.
You agree with me? Yeah. A lot of people, I think that's a tempest in a teapot on that one. I think a lot of people have made too much of it. Very much think it's more of a father-daughter kind of thing. How about some honorable mentions? We must have some honorable mentions because there's still a lot of Robins out there. Anybody?
Well, I already talked about Tim Drake, who's my favorite Robin, and I think he's probably the smartest of all the Robins. Excellent computer hacker. He's kind of been thrown to the side in the New 52 because of the introduction of Damian Wayne, who's just such a really good character. I think Tim's been done a disservice. He was is now called the Red Robin, and
Red Robin.
It's just not a. Yeah, I was afraid you'd do that.
And you were right to be.
He actually recently, spoiler, dies in the Rebirth series, or maybe dies in the Detective Comics Rebirth series. So Tim has gone through a whole lot and hasn't been treated very fairly by the Batverse in recent years, although he was a really good character. And then Stephanie Brown, who was also known as the Spoiler, she held the mantle of Robin for about 2 weeks in comic book time. When Tim got a broken leg, Batman decided to let Stephanie be Robin. And he said, if you don't listen to me the first time, you're out. And the first time she went out and didn't listen to him, he fired her. So not a very long tenure as the Robin, but she did hold the mantle.
Now, you talked a little bit about Bruce Wayne being Robin for a while to who was the Batman at that point?
No, Dick Grayson was Batman. Bruce Wayne was never Robin.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, you're wrong. Bruce Wayne was Robin for a little while, which is what I'm getting to. Bruce Wayne in a 1950s storyline, which was not very long produced, was Robin. He actually had the whole costume. He was Bruce Wayne, but he wasn't Batman yet. He was learning the basics of detective work from a detective named Harvey Harris. And he had a secret identity so that no one would know that Wayne's true motivation in approaching him, which would be become the Batman. So it was a short-lived kind of aside after Robin was created that Batman, Bruce Wayne, was Robin during the 1950s for a very, very short time. I think it was only two issues. Pretty freaky, huh?
I'm going to say as an honorable mention, Jean-Paul Valley as real. He's not a Robin. But he was kind of a sidekick for a while, and I think he fell victim of bad writing.
I think he was a horrible character.
Hard to defend that character.
Alec
I never
fact.
Liked him.
Fun Alec fact.
I thought The Sword of Azrael was a great miniseries. And then when he was introduced into the Batman series, I thought he was just poorly written.
Fun Alec fact, the Robin costume was actually based on Bob Kane's original design for the Batman, which luckily Bill Finger had come in and said, that's not a good costume.
Those shoes, those are terrible shoes. We're all agreed on that, right?
Yeah, well, it wasn't the shoes, but it was the motif. It was supposed to be yellow and green as Batman's motif, and Bill Finger was like, no, let's make them.
Yeah, because there's plenty of yellow and green bats in the world.
All right, then, moving on. Mike. Mike, what do you got at the front of the long box today?
I was going to stick with the Batman theme. At the front of the long box, I have a graphic novel by Paul Dini called Dark Knight, A True Batman Story. It is actually an autobiographical story. Paul Dini was one of the animators for the Batman animated series, or not the one of the animators, I should say, one of the writers for Batman the animated series. And one night he was walking along the street, and two guys just came over and beat the hell out of him. And it is all about his journey in trying to recover from the beating, which left him physically and mentally broken. It's a really good story. It's got the Batman in it and the Joker's in it, but they're tertiary images in Paul's mind, not actually in the real world. But very good, very well done, and it really addresses how violence can affect a person.
Wow, that sounds really good. Tom, you're going to have to top that, and I don't think you can.
I don't know if I can top that, but I do have something that is very, very good. I have the comic book Low by Rick Remender and Greg Tocchini. This came out in March of 2015, and it's still an ongoing series. And it's a series about humans who have created dome cities underwater because the sun has had a problem, and it has started to burn much, much hotter than it used to. And so the human race basically retreated to under the sea, to the depths, to survive from the ever-increasing burning sun. And they sent out a massive amount of probes out into space to try to find another world to colonize. And it's a good, well-written series about the struggle of these people who are facing extinction and trying to live under the sea. And I just couldn't put this book down. It was so fantastic. So I highly recommend it to everyone, especially if you like post-apocalyptic storylines. Yes, Tommy?
Every time you say Under the Sea, I just want to break out into song. Under the Sea.
Me
under
too.
The Sea. Yeah. Under all right, I wasn't the only sea. One. All right. Because you weren't saying underwater. You were just...
It is exactly like
the ocean.
It's just a fun-loving story of pirates and death and destruction and fighting and yeah, it's great. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, I'm going to stick with the theme today and with my social justice theme and civil rights and talk a little bit about the latest Batman. Well, it's not the latest anymore. The Batman cartoon that came out fairly recently still, The Killing Joke. How many people have seen it?
I saw it.
Yep, just Josh. All right,
you mean
Josh.
Out of us or just how many people have seen it?
Well, I was going to say out of us. So half of us have seen it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but two-fourths of us have seen it, not half of us.
Stop that. Why do you? You just tried to upset
Why
me.
Do you torture Josh? Reduce your fraction, people. For those of you not in the know, when you don't reduce your fractions, Josh has a mental conniption. So, Joshua.
Coming
Josh,
for you.
Josh. What did you think about the odd storyline where they tried to up the ante in making a sexual relationship between Batgirl and Batman?
Not having really the history with the character, it just seemed like an odd interjection to me than a destruction or... So it didn't seem misplaced, it just seemed forced and new to me. Because I don't really have the historical background of both characters all that ingratiated into me. So I try to watch all the DC animated features because I think they're particularly well done. Marvel can't seem to get their act together when it comes to animation. It's the same way I feel about DC live action, right? They just can't seem to get their shit together, while Marvel is, for the most part, keeping stuff above the bar, except for the X-Men stuff, which is terrible.
Terrible, terrible. I think they were just upping the girl in the refrigerator trope in their own weird way. I mean, we know how the Killing Joke goes. I don't want to give any spoilers away for people who don't read it, but it doesn't go great for Barbara. And, you know, just making an extra sexual relationship when there's never really been a sexual relationship between Batgirl and Batman before just kind of felt tacked on to make it seem more tragic.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't seem particularly germane to the whole thing. Like, I could have easily seen the whole film done without it. And on a side note, before I get into a side note of a side note, if anybody who works for Comcast is listening, please replace the Teen Titan movie with the English-speaking version because you're driving me nuts. I bought it a week ago, and I still can't watch it because I don't speak Spanish.
Damn it, Teen Titans!
Trivia question. Can you guys tell me the two female superheroes that Dick Grayson has been engaged to?
Abe Lincoln.
Fire.
Sorry, no, it's just
whatever her name is. Fire, whatever her name is. Firestar.
Barbara Gordon? Firestar is in the wrong universe, isn't she?
Starfire. Yeah. Starfire.
Okay,
I never
you guys
liked her,
both
but
got
okay.
it. Starfire and Barbara Gordon. So weird that they have Batman having a relationship with Batgirl, Barbara Gordon, in Killing Joke, when Batgirl was actually engaged to Robin or Nightwing.
Yeah. Well, that was a great little tangent that you took us on, but it wasn't a big enough tangent. Go ahead, Tommy.
Dick really likes the redheads.
Everyone likes redheads, stupid. Come on, they're redheads. Josh, you're more for Asian chicks. I get that. It's true. You've been married for how long?
That doesn't have to be my... I've been married... You're going to make me do math?
Yeah.
13 years?
13 years to a very lucky and beautiful woman who just also happens to be Asian.
Yeah.
Speaking of tangents, Josh.
So I'm going to take us on a tangent since. So we're talking about Sidekicks, which brings me to the movie
Were
Sidekicks,
we?
Which brings me to the fact that Chuck Norris is in the movie Sidekicks. Who is your favorite movie martial artist?
without a doubt, Cynthia Rothrock. Boom. Not only does she do one of our trailers for us, but she's awesome. I can name like 20 of her movies. Maybe not 20, but she's always fantastic. The Scorpion Kick, she made the Scorpion Kick a thing. How many martial artists have made a thing a thing? Sammo Hung, great martial artist. Does he have like a signature kick that no one else can do? No. Jackie Chan can do some crazy stuff. But when someone throws a kick, they don't say, "That's a Jackie Chan kick." But when anyone throws a Scorpion Kick, they go, "Cynthia Rothrock kick."
Hi, I'm Cynthia Rothrock, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
I'm going for Jackie Chan. He's hilarious, and he's a fantastic martial artist. And he was trained in opera.
I don't know the guy's name. Who was that little badass in the movie The Siege?
No, not The Siege. You mean The Raid?
The Raid, yes.
I was just talking about that guy with my wife.
Dominion.
He's my favorite. Yeah, the dog.
For those of you who haven't seen
one of Bruce Lee's original students.
Yeah, and the great thing about him is he's the bad guy. He's the bad guy in The Raid 1. He takes on two of the cops. Now, this is supposed to be just a fight scene. Yeah, a great, great fight scene. Two cops versus one villain. These cops, two of them, should be kicking his ass. This freaking badass. By the end of the movie, you're like, you know what? End of movie. Bad guy wins. I'm in. He is so good. You just want him to win by the end. I was rooting for that bastard. Like, three-quarters of the way into the fight, I'm like, you know what? Screw it. He wants it more. Bad guys win.
He's my favorite.
Yeah, he was awesome. Josh, I know you're looking up the name. Are you looking up the name? I'll just keep talking about it. He shows up in the raid.
But I can't find it.
Yeah, he shows up in The Raid 2 also under a different character's name because everyone loved the character so much. So maybe I'll be able to put that on Twitter later. I'll definitely be able to put up some of those fight scenes. Some of those best fight scenes in any movie. Josh, who's your fave?
I'm gonna go with the short-lived career. I think he's my one of my favorites because I just had such high hopes for his continuation. Brandon Lee.
I thought for sure you were gonna say Jeff Speakman. Do you remember Jeff Speakman?
No, I was not going to say The Perfect Weapon, Jeff Speakman. Yeah. No, I remember The Perfect Weapon, yeah.
And that was a great movie.
It was known for it was a good movie. Yeah. Just the massive amount of hits he could land per second, right? That was Speakman's thing, right? It was punches per second were ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And it wasn't sped up film. He was doing, you know, the Cali stuff. The Cali stuff is known for those multiple strikes. And that was a great movie. He was really good in that. And he just faded away. I had huge hopes for Brandon Lee. All right. Tangent on a tangent. Favorite Brandon Lee movie. I'm going to say Big Trouble in Little Tokyo. That is actually my favorite Brandon Lee movie. And it's awesome. Have you guys seen that?
I like the one with the bowling alley. What was that?
The bowling alley.
Bowling for Dollars.
Brandon Lee was in a movie with a. Oh, Rapid Fire was pretty good.
Tom? Yeah, their hideout was a bowling alley.
Yeah, I remember it now. It was a good movie. What? The Crow?
I love The Crow.
Everyone loved The Crow.
I mean, The Crow was just a fantastic movie. And he was brilliant in it.
All right, indeed. So Mikey? The guy I was talking about, his name is Yayan Ruhayan, and he was also the fight choreographer for that movie.
I would not want to be on that movie then, because that guy was too freaking badass. That's like wrestling Chris Benoit. Like, all right, it's going to be a great match. It's going to look great, but man, one of us isn't making it through this. Ooh, that might be too soon for a joke.
It's like wrestling a llama.
Yeah.
One of you is going to the hospital. The other is going to a morgue.
Every time. Mikey, what was your favorite Brandon Lee movie? Because we kept the tangent going there.
I agree with The Crow.
If you haven't seen Big Trouble in Little Tokyo, it really is a phenomenally stupid movie and a lot of fun. Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee.
Showdown in Little Tokyo.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Showdown in Little Tokyo. It's just a great dumb movie. Oh, well, I guess that just about wraps it up, unless we have a letter. Do we have a letter this week, Tommy?
Of course we have a letter. Why wouldn't we have a letter? We always have letters.
Do we? How do people write into us? Letters.
Our inbox is overstuffed with letters. Everybody is writing in because they know that they could win a graphic novel every month. This month we're giving away Morning Glories number 1, volume 1. And everybody wants to win Morning Glories because it's a great book. So this week we have a letter from Longbox Legionnaire Jonah. Dear Longbox guys, just discovered your podcast. I love the Martian Manhunter episode. Who do you guys think are the best detectives in the DC universe, and what about the Marvel universe? P.S. LT is the most insightful of the four of you. Jonah is obviously a very smart and talented individual. So
and
I
you're
think
obviously
we should probably dedicate in the future a podcast to his subject.
All right, well, I'm going to start it off. I think, and I've always thought, The Question was one of the best detectives in any DC or Marvel universe. He'll follow any thread. My favorite gif of all times is The Question walking past some of the Legionnaires, some of the other people in the Justice League, and Supergirl or one of the other ones is asking, "You went through my garbage?" And The Question's like, "Don't be ridiculous. I go through everybody's garbage."
Everybody's garbage.
Now, do you like the first question, Vic Sage, or do you like the second question, Rene Montoya?
I like the first one better, but Montoya is a terrific character too. One of the few superheroes that go on and do a gender swap and do all this that I really like. The character was a good character, regardless of whether or not she became The Question. Rene Montoya was a good, well thought out, well drawn, well played character. So I respect her as The Question, but I like the original Question better.
Now, in my opinion, I think Elongated Man is probably the best detective in the DC universe.
Wait,
see, I was going to go with Elongated Man also.
I say this every time someone mentions the Elongated Man. What the hell was the thing with his nose wiggling when there was a clue around? That brought me out of it.
Yeah, that's his version of getting an erection when he's about to solve the crime.
I just, every time my nose is wiggling, there's a clue around. What?
That's why he was able to keep Sue Dibney for so long.
Because his nose
could wiggle. Married for a lot of years.
He could stretch. He's like Mr. Fantastic. Of course they're going to be married for a long time. You can stretch any part of your body. You're going to be happily married.
I once read a comic book where he stretched his nose so far he was able to take out a criminal by hitting him with it.
That's right. In addition to them, you also have Detective Chimp.
I thought you were going to say Detective Chimp right off the bat.
No, surprisingly, I wouldn't even put him in my top five, but you know he's a good detective, and he found the Fountain of Youth with Rex the Wonder Dog.
The Spectre?
Jim Corrigan or Crispus Allen?
Jim Corrigan.
How about Angel from Angel and the Ape?
Huh. Mm. All right, Harvey Bullock.
Blue Beetle. He was the one who... Harvey Bullock's not a good detective.
Screw you! He gets shit done, asshole!
I mean, he's a detective. It's a title more than a job.
Look at his arrest record and tell me he's not
Slam
a great
Bradley.
Detective.
Slam Bradley. There you go. One of the best detectives in the DC universe. In Marvel, the best detectives are Jamie Madrox, Jessica Drew, Jessica Jones, Howard the Duck.
Howard the Duck?
Yeah, he's a detective, man. Read a comic.
The Duck. I go with Misty Knight on the Marvel side.
Yeah, Misty Knight's a pretty good detective.
The thing is that Marvel actually has a... there's no fascination with the idea that somebody is intellectually curious in Marvel, besides gadgetry. Marvel is like, you know, it's the red, white, and blue action comic. You know, there's... There are people flying around, you know, fighting, doing their thing. But when it comes to the stuff where you see, like, you know, The Question and Batman, Nightwing really doing, like, detective and spy work, that's not really a Marvel thing. It never really comes out in the main characters. You get a little bit of that at Logan. You get a little bit with Luke Cage and Danny Rand. You get Jessica Jones, but really she's, like... you know, taking photographs. She's not like solving crimes in the comics. And even Misty Knight, once she gets the bionic limb, she loses that whole sense and feeling too. And I just feel it's actually kind of depressing from the Marvel side when you think about that, because any intellectual pursuit besides high technology is really just a wash out of the Marvel universe, unless somebody knows something different.
Well, I was going to ask about Moon Knight. Doesn't Moon Knight is a little bit more of the, like, follow all the trails? You were going to say that, Tommy?
Investigation work. Yeah, huh. I'd say Moon Knight, and also Captain America sometimes does a little investigation work. He sometimes goes undercover.
So a little bit of Captain, and Moon Knight usually gets there through crazy rather through investigation. Like, he doesn't, you know? Run over everybody and you use a couple of different voices to get there, you find stuff out. But it's not like
a little beating it out of people, but
he's no Rorschach and he's no Batman.
Oh, he's no Rorschach. Like,
If you read X-Factor Volume 3, Jamie Madrox is the head of it, and it's a detective agency. It is a great comic book written by Peter David. That's why I put Madrox as the top detective in Marvel Comics. Although, if T'Challa wanted to be, he'd be the best detective.
I mean, I love Jamie Madrox. I've always loved the concept of the Multiman, just being in multiple places at once. You know, 10 of them out there just learning every skill he could get his hands on. You know, I just think of, like, all the things I would have done in college if I had actually had 26 of me to go around and get everything done. It would have been pretty fantastic. So I can see Jamie being an awesome detective, and I really wish there was just a comic based on him just being a detective. That would be fantastic. I would read that. Get on that, Marvel.
You would have had 21 DUIs minimum. Minimum.
Yeah, but think how many times I would have been through law school.
That's a good point. Speaking of law school, by the way, did Moon Knight have a degree? Did any of his personalities, was any of his personalities a lawyer?
He's only got three,
I don't
man.
Think so. His personalities were cabbie and a mercenary.
And a
what
playboy.
What was his other personality?
He's a rich playboy.
Yeah, but he got his money by being a mercenary, didn't he?
Oh, he was also Moon Knight.
Well, that's how we got a werewolf.
Yeah, I guess you can kind of include Daredevil, sort of the investigative lawyer thing, but still not heavy on it. Not heavy enough for me.
All right. Fair enough. Well, that just about does it, even that weird tangent all nice and wrapped up. But does anyone have any plugs we'd like to give?
I would like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com. And I would also like to thank a good friend of the podcast, Ian Leno at ianleno.com.
Ianleno.com?
Too late.
Damn it.
If you haven't heard of Ian Leno by now, go check out his website at ianleno.com. It's good stuff.
And I like to plug our Twitter page where I'm putting something, a GIF I found from Big Trouble to Showdown in Little Tokyo with Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee in there. It's at Outside the Long Box on Twitter. We've been having a lot of fun this week talking to some indie professional wrestlers, including old Blue Pants herself, Leva Bates, about indie wrestling problems. And we've also had a couple of discussions going back and forth about different comic books that are coming out. So please go to at the Long Box Guys and chat us up about all the kind of stupid stuff that is pop culture that we like to talk about.
I'd like to thank my local comic shop, Friendly Neighborhood Comics. Just go to friendlycomics.com because, hey, that place is clean. In a retro perspective, I would like to thank all the volunteers for the March for Science at Boston. Great job, guys. Thanks for helping out.
Oh, Josh, did you actually went to that one?
I did indeed go for the March for Science and listened to some very lovely speakers, talked to some volunteers, took some pictures of science dogs, and then went and had some beer.
I was busy working that day. I saw your email about that too late. Sorry I didn't get back to you. My wife did indeed go to that. She should have met up with you, but she was just going to a couple of quick things. Also, my restaurant, Veggie Galaxy, being a vegan restaurant in Cambridge, after the March for Science was swamped, because scientists know that a vegan lifestyle is pretty healthy. It was actually the best day we've ever had in the history of Veggie Galaxy, and I worked a 15-hour shift just trying to feed all the nut jobs that was at that, and we had a great time.
Well, congratulations to Veggie Galaxy. I hope you guys were overstaffed for the day. There were plenty of restaurants in the area that actually had no idea there was going to be an extra 75,000 people in downtown Boston, and we tried to eat at one of them.
Huh. Which one did you eat at?
Silvertone. It's right off the square, and they literally had one bartender and one waitress on.
Oh, God. I look at the calendar at the beginning of every single week and try to figure out if anything is going on. The Women's March did not sneak up on me. The Science March, snuck up on me until Thursday afternoon. And I'm like, oh, that might be a big thing. And we threw a couple extra people on, thankfully, at the very end. But we ran out of a lot of things. We were not prepared for the volume of food we sold, and it was a lot. Anyone else for the plug?
Once again, I would like to plug our monthly giveaway. You can email us at luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com. In April, we are giving away Morning Glories Volume 1. So just email us, let us know what you like about the podcast, what you think we can do a little bit better, and maybe suggest a topic for us. And we might read your
This whole month we're doing the topic of sidekicks because of a Long Box Legionnaire, so don't think that we won't talk about whatever you tell us to.
And we should also tell you, you should go and subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Long Box Guys. So just go to YouTube, type in Long Box, one word, and then Guys, separate word. You'll find our videos. We've done some on Green Lantern and Nightwing, and more to come soon.
Yes. All right, guys. That'll about do it for this podcast. And Tommy, did you give us the catchphrase yet?
Yeah, maybe.
Josh, by the way, while he's thinking about that, a guy ran by, and he was just stealing a whole bunch of crap. And he said, don't worry, this is no one's sector. Was it yours?
It's not. I mean, it's not my sector.
Well, all right, so at least it's not yours. And Mikey, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like a Twitter war with the Divinals.
It's not going to end well, and you might touch yourself. I get you. Tommy.
Don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love.
Born on a table in 2000 double X. Open my eyes and I disconnect. Look down to see the future glowing in my hand. An artificial man. Taxes will charge you up. You on your way. Battles ahead, no sense to slow this race. Time's running out, now I'm an agent of the light. It's time to start this fight. No man of air will burst my cloud. No man of heat will melt me now. No man of war will chop me down. And through these obstacles I'll blast. Take it from me, take it from me. I'll be the one to last through the final stage. Take it from me. Crawl my way through and I've created quite a scene. A mix of melted gears and kerosene. I only look ahead to see the final boss and never weigh the cost. No man of speed will slow me down. No mortar blast can take me out. No water man can make me drown.
from me, take it from me. And when the music's through fading, it won't be too long. Fill my energy tank, cause I gotta stay strong. Through these obstacles I'll blast, take it from me, take it from me.
Can we do it without chicken in your mouth? Can we just start this whole thing over again?
Absolutely. Are you... It's so good. I just got home. I wasn't even thinking. I thought I was talking to my buddies.